I know how to do resilience because I've done it before. It will be there for me when I need it. False. You need to invest in it. Otherwise, you're saying, yeah, yeah, there will be gas or electricity in my car. But if you're not putting it back in, no, actually, there will not be.
Write the world-changing book that will help grow your personal brand and your business as it makes the world a better place. Welcome to the Author's Corner, hosted by Robin Colucci. Every episode, we bring you some of the most successful authors, as well as other industry experts, to share some inspiration, motivation, tactical strategy, and fun. We'll also talk about the challenges and trends in the publishing industry. Don't get stuck in the idea phase. Join the Author's Corner today. Start writing the book you've dreamed about.
Hello and welcome to the Author's Corner. I'm your host, Robin Colucci, and I don't know about you, but sometimes I really feel that as much as I am a person with a lot of bounce, that sometimes I just struggle to be as resilient as I feel that maybe I need to be, right, to get through certain days or certain weeks. And if this resonates at all with you, I think you will really appreciate our guest today. Dr. Marie-Helene Pelletier is a woman who has a long-standing career in business management and psychology, and she has spearheaded a dialogue on the crucial issues of leadership resilience and workplace health. Drawing on her extensive background in corporate insurance, governance, and public sectors, she brings national and international perspectives and expertise on mental health and resilience. Dr. Pelletier has spearheaded a dialogue on the critical issues of leadership resilience and workplace health. She is a bilingual practicing psychologist with over 20 years' experience in clinical psychology and advisory workplace psychology, and she holds a PhD and an MBA from the University of British Columbia. She's also a member of the Global Clinical Practice Network of the World Health Organization and past director on the boards of the Canadian Psychological Association, as well as the International Association of Applied Psychology. And Marie has presented and authored and co-authored a number of industry and academic publications and has won numerous industry awards. And so today we are going to talk about resilience, because this is a key area of Dr. Pelletier's expertise, and we are going to cover some interesting and surprising things, including building resilience through adversity, examples of resilience in action, and one of my favorite things is how you can gamify developing resilience and strengthening your resilience through some simple and fun activities that you can apply. So I hope that you will find this not only informative and entertaining, but perhaps you will leave this episode with a little extra bounce in your step. Enjoy. Marie-Helene, welcome to the Author's Corner.
Oh, Robin, thank you. So glad to be here.
Well, it's a delight to have you, and I'm actually very curious to hear what you're going to have to say today, because I think resilience has been a big word in my life, and
yes,
I've been told I have a lot of bounce. I'm going to be very curious to hear what you have to say. I'd love to, before we get into the specifics, though, I'd love to hear a little bit about, and I'm sure our listeners would love to hear as well, what got you interested enough in the topic of resilience to write a book about it?
Yeah, it's, long-term interest, because my background combines psychology and business. And even from the psychology side, which I ended up doing first in my overall sort of career story, always had an interest very much to be proactive. So what can we do as early as possible to mitigate risks down the road? This is where resilience building and protection lives. And so there was that. And then there is also, from the business side of things, people I worked with, my executive coaching clients, the audiences I speak to when I give keynotes, who were very much like, almost like, I wanted to say starving for finding their edge, something that's going to help them in both their personal and professional life. And so all of this came together and clearly said, right on this topic. So that's how it happened.
Yeah, fantastic. So I love how you're talking about like individual resilience as well as organizational resilience. What are some of the parallels you see between those two? And then where do you think are some of the key differences? I know it's a loaded question, but I'm ready for a good long answer. It's fine.
Okay. Thank you for that permission. I'll still stay on the concise side, but I love this question because it is actually very important that we think of our resilience in the workplace in that system. And in this system, there is us as individual, there are teams that we're part of or leading, and there is the overall organization. And it's extremely important that we keep all these parts of the system in mind because, say, in this particular case in my book, I've put more of the accent in this particular conversation on the individual resilience. And it can only be considered and built and strategically planned when we have clarity on the team and the organizational context. So that's the first thing I would say. Second, I would say is in all cases, when we talk about resilience, we're talking about our ability to go through adversity, which could be acute or chronic, or sometimes both at the same time.
Right.
So go through that adversity, come out even stronger. So there is a growth aspect to this. And that's true for us as individuals. It's true for us as teams, and it's true for us as organizations. It just involves different types of actions and where we're going to put our focus. But ultimately, it is about going through these demanding times and coming out even stronger.
Yeah, absolutely. What would be, does an example come to mind of like how this plays out in action?
Oh, absolutely. It comes in action, and that's exactly where I wanted to be with this book. Not just a useful, hopefully, reflection, very much what actions does this lead to? And part of the challenge is that when we're thinking about our resilience, most people, especially now, post-pandemic, we could actually be pretty good at making a list of all the things that ideally we would do that would likely help us. And we would be right. Research does point to exercise, nutrition, sleep, time with family and friends. Yeah. Everyone would love all this. And then they get here in their life that is full and overflowing and it doesn't land. Right. And they struggle and they see their resilience going down. So concretely then, how do we do this is where I'm coming in with switching our approach to just wishing we'll eventually do these things or thinking that we're naturally resilient, we don't need them, or thinking we'll do them when we have time, but we never do.
Right.
But if we change the approach to a strategic approach, that means it's going to take our actual context into account realistically. And we will be able to define actions that totally make sense. And these actions will look different for you, Robin, in this moment in time.
Right.
Me in this moment in time. And then you and I a few months from now, because our contexts continue to change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's really smart because it's so true that it can be incredibly difficult to stick to a very rigid idea of self-care when there's nothing about life that seems to be very rigid anymore, right? Like,
yes.
Anyway, so yeah, you care to expound upon that at all?
Yes, exactly. And we know this, not only because of the logic that you just expressed makes complete sense. Also, we know this from research on healthy habits. And you know how most of us have heard of this general guideline of if we want to have a habit, we keep it the same all the time at the same time and all that. But now we have newer research that's saying, yes, there is something, of course, useful about that habit, because then it removes a decision point and that's helpful. But what will make habits stick even better is to have versions of them so that we can maintain it in a different ways when context changes. So let's say, for example, you and I, or any of us really, but let's say we've done the work to identify our values because it needs to be personal to us, right? So I bring people in the book through this reflection that's very personal to each of us at this moment in time. But let's say we've identified through this whole process, we end up with our strategic resilience plan. And in it, there is somewhere an action that is about our desire to bring meditation, let's say, in our lives, which would be good.
Great example. Yeah.
Research supports it. Most of us would love to do it. We trust the research and it is extremely established. So it's solid. But then we're like, can't make it happen. So maybe the realistic goal, maybe that I will do one time 2 minutes each week. And let's say I plan just the way we do SMART goals and all these kinds of things. Maybe I say it's going to be at lunch before eating my lunch on Mondays, for example. But then I want a plan B that if for whatever reason, my boss calls me at that time, I need to eat quickly because I've got a meeting after, it's not happening. Then maybe my plan B is 30 seconds at the end of that day. And of course, 30 seconds at the end of the day, once a week, is not going to be life-changing in terms of amount of meditation, clearly. However, it is actually life-changing from a psychological perspective because now I've not given up and let it go and it's finished forever. Mm-mm, it stayed on my radar. And next Monday, I'm going to try again. Maybe I will protect the half hour before my lunch so that if something happens, I'll still have my 2 minutes. And now I'm building successful implementation. It impacts my sense of self-efficacy, so the belief that I can influence things, and then we go from there. But that was personal, specific to my context.
Okay. Since we're talking about context, and since I have you here, I'm going to take advantage a little bit because here's where I struggle is travel.
Yes.
Right? So if I'm in my own little happy environment, I can keep it together with my workouts, my nutrition, even my meditation. But insert travel.
Yes.
And I find it much more difficult. I mean, I think lately I haven't swayed as far as maybe in the past, but I still struggle with travel. Can you talk a little bit about why it's so much harder when we travel? And then if you have any tips for us who have to be a little mobile in our work, that would also be fantastic.
Love it. And that's such a great example, Robin, because for each of us, either it's been part, it is now, it will be part of what we do. Sometimes we travel just personal travel. Sometimes it's for work. One way or the other, we will get out of this exact particular, more stable environment. And so, yes, the context changes. And so for those who travel a bit more, that usually will actually be part of what you want in your strategic resilience plan. There may be a pillar about travel. And in that pillar, you may have specific actions. So for example, often it will be about translating some of the actions that work well in this context, in that context, and translating in a way that is realistic.
Right.
So let's say, do you want to share with us right now? Can I put you on the spot a little bit, Robin, since we're talking just for the fun of it?
Yeah. If not,
I can use. Okay. But what is one example of something you do on the physical exercise side in your current context?
Yeah. So I ride my Peloton bike.
Wonderful. And you do that, we'll just invent for right now. Let's say you do that for half an hour. Okay. And let's say you do that, let's say 3 times a week, for example. Okay.
Fair. Yeah.
So, okay. Everyone, Robin's nodding, like roughly. Yes. Okay.
Yes. I'm nodding. So, I'm nodding saying that sounds about right to my,
love it.
My home life routine.
Okay. So then you look at where you're going, because it will depend, right? It will depend on which hotel are you in? What time are you in that hotel for? I mean, if we're arriving at midnight from a long flight, we're not going to head to the gym in that moment, obviously. So it will depend. So you look at the schedule. But if overall, you know, you want to maintain an element of physical exercise, maybe what you do is you make sure that, and if let's say you're flying somewhere, while you're in the airport, instead of spending all the waiting time sitting, maybe you take a moment to actually walk to the further gate that you can and come back to yours. You've added some walking at a moment where you were captive anyway, and it's not the same, right? Clearly. But what we've done is we've maintained the habit in just a different way. So that's an example. See, we're translating, we're keeping the goal, the value, the actual activity, translating it in a way that makes sense in this context.
Yeah. Yeah. I was lucky last trip. There was a Peloton in the gym. So that was nice, but that's rare.
Exactly. Well, wonderful. When, and you know, if your schedule allows you for you to go there, because sometimes
yeah,
you arrive
I only made
late.
It, the whole week I made it down there once for a 45 minute ride, but you know, it wasn't nothing. So I figured, okay.
Yes. And well, and that's, I love what you're saying just now as well, that it would not be realistic to think that you'll be able to maintain the exact same quantity and frequency in a different context where you're meeting also other demands. And so we want to bring self-compassion there. We want to be realistic about the goal and bring the self-compassion. So it's like, atta girl, instead of, oh, it's better than nothing. Even more, it's atta girl. You went, you did it. It's wonderful.
Yeah, and that was another adjustment I made because my average ride might be 30 minutes, but I didn't know if I'd get another shot. So I did 45.
Exactly. Flexible, adaptable, wonderful.
Yeah, that was just an example of me being good. Now, if we talk about my behavior at the bar, that's a whole nother.
Well, it is also something to think about because yeah, it does have an impact as well. When we travel, the use of alcohol can be, so it's everything.
I mean,
it's present. And so
right?
You want to make your choices.
It wasn't like, I didn't get sloppy people, okay, but it was definitely more than at home, which is very little.
And we want to, but it's important because it is part of our overall health. So exactly, want to keep an eye, that's all, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay, so you mentioned something about the resilience myth. I find this really intriguing since your book is called The Resilience Plan. What is the myth about resilience, or what is the resilience myth?
Yeah, it really felt like I had to address a bit of the myth at the beginning before we get into the plan, because it could be easy for us to think, for example, and here's one of the myths, that we are already resilient. It's part of our personality. Clearly, you've gone through very demanding things. You've been very resilient through them. Maybe even people around you call you the rock. You're the rock of the family. You're the rock of the group of friends. And so you start thinking, yeah, this is who I am. And therefore, I need to do nothing about it because that's who I am. False. Resilience is not a personality trait. Okay. Now, another myth could be, okay, sure, it's not a personality trait, but I know how to do resilience because I've done it before. It will be there for me when I need it. False. You need to invest in it. Otherwise, you're saying, yeah, yeah, there will be gas in my or electricity in my car. But if you're not putting it back in, no, actually, there will not be.
You can run out.
You can run out. Yes. Another myth sometimes is, sure, it'd be great to be resilient and all this, but there's nothing I can do to really influence it. It will either be there or not. It's it's just a feeling and, you know, I'll have to cross the river when I get there. No, no, no. We do have more agency than this. We absolutely can sort of increase our baseline, if I can call it that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic.
Hi there, Robin here. Have you been considering writing a thought leadership book that grows your business? How about writing a quality, standout book with a real book publishing deal behind it that not only grows your business, but also grows your influence and reach? In case you're new to the Author's Corner, my name is Robin Colucci, and I help world-class experts write world-changing books that get published. With over 30 years of experience in the publishing industry, I have helped clients write and publish books with Big Five and other top publishers. Many have gone on to become bestsellers from Amazon all the way up to the New York Times. And others have increased their business income 600 times or more as a result of their book and partnering with me and my team. If you are a top-notch expert who is ready to write your world-changing book, go schedule a free consultation call with one of my trusted team members today. We have a limited number of slots available, and we only take clients who are committed to the process and want to get their book started now. If that sounds like you, go to www.worldchangingbooks.com/application. To apply for one of our exclusive spots. Once again, that link is www.worldchangingbooks.com/application. Now, back to the show.
So what would you say is are a couple of great tools for increasing that baseline? I mean, I imagine some of our listeners might not think of themselves as resilient in this moment. So what are some things that people can do to increase their resilience?
Yes. Well, what I'm proposing in the book is to really, and it does not take long. Sometimes people think, oh, I don't even have time for this. No. It is a concise book. It's a book that gets to the point. It has distilled information based on research, but also based on what we do in strategy in business. So very applied, so that you can create your plan. So in a nutshell, first, you're getting even clearer on your values. Again, very personal to each of us. You list whatever, 5, 10, 15, if you can, just have that clarity, both personal and professional. You list that. You also explore with a very realistic eye what types of demands you're facing right now and what are your sources of supply. But I, like I said, realistic eye. Here's what happens. People think when I ask them about demands that it's a couple of things that are sort of stressful at work right now. Mm-mm. Demands is, yes, it includes that, but much more. Demands is anything that requires some of your energy, positive or negative. You just got this promotion that you wanted, demand. You've got this new boss that you don't quite understand, demand. And even on the personal side, things you don't want so much, oh, I still have to co-parent with the father of my child and it's challenging, demand. You're helping a parent who has a health issue. You don't even want to put it there because you don't want to feel, you know, it's still a demand. You want to be realistic because highly capable, busy, you know, people, we tend to minimize what we have in terms of demands. And if we do that, of course, we're not going to take action, right? So the whole good, very realistic look here, a look at your context. I explain all this in the book. We won't go into detail here. But then you can create a plan that will focus only on some areas. So it's not an everything piece. So say your plan, Robin, may just have that exact pillar, three pillars, I usually say. You may have one that's travel, and there may be one main action in it that you will just make sure you do some physical activity every day. And that's it. So it's about doing a good look at our current self, context, and then making a plan that is very realistic. And again, that's the other piece. Sometimes people will say, oh yeah, I will find a bike somewhere and might do my half hour three times a week. Not realistic.
Right.
So we want to keep it like this. And for different people, it would be something else. Sometimes it's about having better boundaries. Lots of great opportunities coming my way. I feel like saying yes to all of them. If I do, I'm going to burn out. I'm going to get exhausted. Maybe a first action is to say, ah, very interesting. I'd love to say yes. Let me get back to you tomorrow. Just learning to say this so that you can go and look at your other commitments.
Right.
And then respond. That's right. And then respond in a way that actually keeps you grounded and resilient.
Yeah, I think that is important to learn. Even if something seems like fun, that it just might not be the thing that you can add right now.
Very good point. Yes, I've worked with individuals in my executive coaching that got exhausted exclusively from positive things.
Right.
Promotion. Seriously, promotion they wanted. Moving to a new house, renovating the kitchen before they move in that new house. And I don't know what else was going on, but all these things they've been wanting and were fantastic, too much. So the more we can sometimes manage, spread the changes.
You know, I love that you brought that up because I think that so often we associate resiliency with overcoming difficulty or overcoming challenge or bouncing back from something hard. But, you know, when you talk about how do you sustain resiliency or keep cultivating resiliency in the face of great success, in the face of big wins, in the face of just the demands of a great life. That's something I haven't really thought about before. That's really brilliant.
Yeah. I've seen it. Often people have actually built a career they really wanted. I mean, yes, there are some people that may find themselves in a place where, no, it's not that exciting. But there are also a number of people who have built to be where they are. They've worked towards it. Now they have it. And they are just sinking. And so, yes, we want to pay attention to all demands.
Mm-hmm. From what I'm hearing overall, in your sharing is that this is the kind of thing that can sneak up on you and bite you. Talk a little bit more about that aspect of this. And maybe if you have an example of somebody you worked with, you know, of course, confidentially, but that where this played out and how you helped them deal with it. Yeah.
It sneaks up. I mean, it's the only times when I've worked with people that caught it early. Now, it doesn't mean it's always like this. I'm just sharing from my particular work. Is people who had already gone through a burnout before, and they are sure not going back there, so they catch it. Either that, or there's someone very close to them in their personal life have gone through it, so they've seen it almost like firsthand, like secondhand, but very close. And so otherwise, here's what happens. At some point, burnout, as defined by World Health Organization, is we're exhausted, we're cynical, and it is impacting our performance. And the signs earlier, there are signs, but we ignore them. So the earlier signs are when we're starting to have less energy, starting to not feel so engaged with what we do. And we're starting to see just more things, more important ones, to fall through the cracks. Because we all have the occasional fall through the cracks, unfortunate situations, but now it's starting to be more. But here's what happens. And all of this, we can all relate. We've been there, right? But here's what we do. We ignore. We say, it's not that much. I don't have time for this. What would I do anyway? I don't have time to do anything about it. So we carry on and we continue to slide down, unfortunately. And so a few things to consider. If right now you're actually feeling pretty good, that's a fantastic time to build your strategic plan. Again, I'm talking about an overall investment. I mean, if you're reading the actual book, that may be a few hours, not that long, it is concise. But doing the exercises, each of them are like sometimes 5 minutes, sometimes 15 minutes. It's not that long. But it's a great time to build it now if you feel proactive. If you're feeling like, yeah, you're seeing some of these signs, but you can't bring yourself to taking action, that may be a moment where connecting with someone you trust around you will help you. Like a peer, just someone in your network that you feel close enough to. A mentor. If you work with an executive coach, that could be the person. Someone on the religion side, if you're connected that way. Someone that you can talk to and say, I'm noticing these things and I'm not quite sure what to do next. Right? And these are ways in which you'll start changing that slide down and course correcting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I notice that happens, and it's happened to me in the past, but I've gotten actually a lot better at being disciplined about this. But you know, when you're feeling really tired or overwhelmed or overwrought, there can be a tendency to gravitate towards things that actually don't help you, like sugar or fried foods or alcohol or, you know, not exercising. So what would you say to help somebody who might be finding themselves in that cycle right now? Because I think that can be the hardest time to, because then you have like traction pulling you the other way.
Yes.
And so it takes something, I think, different maybe to get on track. But I'd like to hear from the expert.
Well, so let's actually use that framework that I was just sharing. So let's say this individual values a number of things, including health. Okay. And they look at their sources of demands. Work's very demanding, family, friends, tons of demands right now. People are separating, kids needing something in school, like a lot. And so therefore, on the supply side, literally, they're watching a TV show at night and that's it kind of thing, like not that much. And in fact, they're seeing themselves, say, reach out to the chips or the not so healthy foods very easily at the end of their day. Okay. And then they look at their context. Okay, the context, and we would explore all this. I won't do that now for time. Okay. So then in their plan, they may say, okay, I value health. I know right now I really feel like having something salty at the end of my day. It's so easy for me to reach to the bag of chips, and I know it's not helping me, and I want to do something different. So I may have a pillar here that is specific to, say, nutrition, for example, and I may decide on an action, and look at this, it has to be simple. So maybe I've tried hummus before and I've had hummus with vegetables, but lots of hummus. And so therefore it actually tastes a little salty and good, and I like it.
Right.
Well, maybe my action is to make sure I always have hummus in my fridge and that I always have a couple of vegetables cut that I will actually do in the morning when I have time before the chips are calling me. And maybe I'm actually going to put the chips in the garbage can. So they're not even in the house. Sad thing to do, but depending on how serious I am with this. Or I keep the chips, but I tell myself I can only have chips after I've had a bowl of vegetables with my hummus.
Yeah, there you go.
Create friendly rules, you know?
And make that's the one that always works better for me is, sure, if you still want them after the hummus and carrots, have some chips. Because it's hard for me to, you know, I don't like to be told no by anyone, including myself.
Exactly. See, but that's the beauty. You know, that's the reason why these plans need to be customized for each of us, right? So for you, this combination may actually work well because now you've given your body something else first. You will probably by default have less chips just because of that. You could also say, yes, you can have chips only if they're coming from a bowl, not the bag.
Right.
And so therefore, okay, you're managing the portion a bit, doing the things that you know you should do, but unless you've decided in advance and made them simple, they're not going to happen. But now if they're in your plan, doable.
You know, something I found that's recent because of the apps, right, is that you can gamify some of these things. And there's some brilliant programs out there. I guess I shouldn't, I don't get any money for plugging anything, but but I mean, I've recently discovered the Weight Watchers app where you track what you eat and you track your weigh-ins and, you know, it gives you all these, you know, virtual rewards. And Peloton does the same thing, which if it didn't, I can tell you it would have already been the most expensive clothing rack I ever owned for the last 3.5 years if it didn't have this gamification element. Is that something that you work on with your clients or like, I'm just curious, like what is your thinking, you know, from a psychological perspective on the gamification aspect?
Oh, a lot of people respond really well to gamification because really what you're doing is connecting a treat, right, to attaining.
Yes, exactly.
So it's like,
I'm pretty much at the level of my pugs.
we're humans.
Give me a treat and I'll perform.
It's behavioral. We can use this in so many ways, right? It's similar to if you're trying to get something that you need to do for work that you're really not like, oh my God, you know, it feels heavy. It feels terrible, terribly hard for you to put yourself there. But if you say, okay, alarm, 15 minutes, I'm doing this, and then I have 5 minutes break. Oh, okay. You've just built in, again, a motivation. So in general, gamification works. That's in part why all these apps do it. And so that's a good idea. Even more important, I would say for you, as you're listing your values, highly likely on your values, fun is there. Like you like it when there's element of fun. You love humor. You love it when it's, you know, there's something to be discovered. You're curious maybe. See, I don't know you, but it comes out.
You got my number.
There you go. So that goes in your values. So therefore, of course, for someone like you in your plan, that you want that to be reflected. So if you had not found yet an app that connects with, say, some element of gamification of food, it could have been one of your actions. Now that you know that this app is one that you connect with, that could actually go there and say, commit to checking this app and working with it on a whatever it is, daily or weekly basis, because you know it works for you. For other people, maybe different.
Yeah, because I do find if it's fun, I don't even have to remember to do it, right? Like I just do it.
Yeah, there you go.
Which helps a lot.
Yes, it does. And plus, fun is good.
Fun is good. You kind of get a twofer, right? Because you get a little boost from, oh, good. The app gave me a high five. Isn't it silly? Isn't it just so silly? It's so silly, but it works. I think it's so interesting that, you know, just there's things about human beings that are generally hardwired.
Yes.
Right? And one is we respond to praise.
Yes,
positively,
we do.
To praise.
Yeah.
Even if it comes from an app.
That's true. Now, I will say, since we're talking about this, that as AI gets into our lives even more, personal and professional, one of the things we know is that we want to make sure we also get that from humans. Because what the app does is a quasi-human sort of recognition. And it has the gamification aspect. Oh, I have this treat, I have the win, or I have the, you know, that kind of thing. However, there is an element from the human interaction that
absolutely
we'll want to make sure we maintain. Right now, it's not so much an issue because AI is entering our lives, but as AI makes its way even more, we'll probably want
and
to be
I would
delivered.
Never mean to imply that these should be a substitute for human
exactly.
contact. Yeah, that's for sure. Because I think that also builds resiliency when you have strong connections with
it does.
Other humans or dogs, as the case may be also. Oh my goodness. Well, MH, this has been so much fun. I just can't even believe how the time is zooming by. I'm going to toss out to you my signature final question. So here it is. What have I not asked you that you would love to answer?
Well, I'll say, what change do I want to see in the world?
Oh, I love that.
With this book.
Considering my business is world-changing books, I love that question. Please.
you can take it too. Please. I would say in this case, I want to know that there will be even more people thinking strategically about their resilience, talking this way so that it can connect with others, and most importantly, taking strategic actions to build, protect their resilience.
Well, MH, thank you so much for sharing these invaluable insights that I'm sure will support anybody who's thinking of or in the process of writing a book, because you want to talk about resiliency. It's definitely a requirement. So thank you once again for being with us on the Author's Corner.
Thank you, Robin. It was a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you for tuning in to another amazing episode of The Author's Corner. You're one step closer to writing the world-changing book you've dreamed about for years. To access today's show notes and other helpful resources, simply visit our website at theauthorscorner.com. A positive review would be appreciated. Until next time.